It is Thursday, December 1, Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio. A very good morning to you. It is just a glorious morning for Australian sport with the Socceroos qualifying for the round of 16, courtesy of a Matt Leckie special. What a performance, turning the defender inside out on the hour mark there this morning, scoring against Denmark, 1-0 Australia, and through to play, well, the top place side from Group C, and at the moment, it looks like that's going to be Argentina because they've scored less than a minute into the second half against Poland. Goal Argentina and 1-0 up there. The other game between Saudi Arabia and Mexico is scoreless. But Argentina 1-0 up and basking Loz in the glory, though, of the Socceroos this morning because that was an incredible performance.
Oh, they were unbelievable, Mitter. Yeah, unbelievable performance from Australia to go through the way they have done. To win two games in the group stage, not many people fancied they would be able to do that against two top 10 opponents. They're calling it the group of death and also have two clean sheets. I think it's been a remarkable performance from this Aussie team. They were under pressure before they actually got to the tournament. They did it the tough way, qualifying. They had a lot of players missing. Arguably their best player, Harry Suter, went down with an ACL injury. And he's only played limited minutes in the lead-up to the World Cup. He's been our standout player in defence. So I think everyone's just proud. Everyone has been wanting the Socceroos to do well. Graham Arnold himself was under plenty of pressure. He was only a bee's, you know, what away from being sacked. But now to take the Socceroos through to the remaining 16 at a World Cup, that's unbelievable.
Mexico have just scored. So 1-0 Mexico as well, it looks like, against Saudi Arabia. So I'll bring up to date how this group looks with that. Certainly Argentina on top of the group at the moment. So,
and Poland is still in second.
Still
in second because Mexico will go to 4 points. Poland are on 4 points, but the goal difference.
Superior goal difference, spot on, Loz. So,
come on, Argentina.
Yeah, you really want us
I want Messi.
Argentina.
No bigger stage, you know? Bigger stage. Certainly. Upset the world.
Oof, that would be something.
Pressure, nothing better.
Just on the text line, Bruce at Camden, best place to listen to us is the Tab app. Very, very easy on the Tab app. You just go into, at the bottom of the Tab app, Play Central is the menu there. Play Central at the bottom. Then just click on Sky Sports Radio, and that's where you can catch the Big Sports Breakfast. Yesterday, Pup, 2 for 293, Australia at stumps, a dominant first day. What'd you make of it?
I hate to say it, but this test match is over for West Indies. If I can be very honest, I just think Australia is in a very dominant position. They'll look to make 500+. I think Khawaja Labuschagne outstanding when there was a bit of movement. West Indies inexperienced bowling, bowled too short, too wide. And then Smitty Labuschagne outstanding at the end as well. Marnus was brilliant the whole way through. I think he gave one chance at second slip. Smitty looked in unbelievable form. He's definitely back to his best. So I reckon you could lock him in for 100 today if he doesn't get a good one early. And then I think it's going to be... I don't think say it all the time. Don't judge a wicket until both teams are batted on it. I don't think this pitch is a 500 in the first innings pitch. I think Australia have batted extremely well and will make plus 500. But I think the inexperience of the West Indies attack has been shown in one day. And I think you watch Australia bowl on this pitch and it's going to look like a completely different wicket.
Australian Open Golf teed off just over 15 minutes ago. I see Adam Scott is just about to tee off at Kingston Heath. He's playing on there today. So all underway there in Melbourne. Gee, Loz, are you copying it a bit on the text line about playing Marnus Labuschagne into form, apparently?
I just read that.
People don't listen.
No.
People
okay,
don't
so
listen.
This is why I gave...
Why do you want him to start now, Loz?
I set you up for the right of reply, so go for it.
I said to Michael yesterday, has Marnus been out of form because I haven't been reading about him scoring runs? Or is it just, has he been scoring runs, or is it I'm just thinking because he's out of mind, out of sight? I haven't heard about him. And people are now saying I was very critical of Marnus, but that's not the case.
No, you just pondered the question.
I was just pondering the question to my co-host.
Fair question too, because he hasn't been in the short forms. He hasn't been playing any games for Australia. We don't see much of the domestic cricket. It's not followed heavily. So, fair question. But Like I say, I think his Shield performances this season have been very good. I follow him on social media as well, so I've been watching what he's been doing in and around training. And mate, he's at the top of his game right now, Marnus. He bats in a hard place. That number three position is a tough place to bat. Technically, he looks very good. He leaves the ball well. His shot selection is very mature. He's a standout player at the moment. And while we've got, especially him and Smith, 3 and 4, and Smitty in this form as well, man, that's why I feel like this Australian team, you know, is better than how we've been performing. Now, I don't see why there's not room for both Smith and Labuschagne, especially in one-day cricket as well.
Yeah.
They can open the batting in one-day cricket. They can bat wherever you want. It just, those two at the moment are a class above everyone else.
Certainly are. Time to talk some footy. And, we're still waiting to see how it all lands in regards to the collective bargaining agreement. And joining us now is the Chief Executive of the Rugby League Players Association, Clint Newton. Clint, good morning.
Morning, lads.
Now, as it stands, and I guess this is probably the million-dollar question, when do you expect a new CBA to be signed?
Oh, listen, I'm no Nostradamus, so I'm not gonna start predicting. I can tell you when I would have liked it to have been done, but anyway, we are where we are, and so this is about just trying to think, you know, optimistically and move forward. But the reality is I can't put an end date on it. Players, you know, and clubs and no doubt everyone wants it resolved, because the more we get on to talking about footy and how to advance our code, the better, rather than doing this. But at the same time, as I've always stated, we just won't sacrifice the deal on behalf of players for just a quick result. So we've just got to continue to work through it.
Clint, these are never fun. I unfortunately was a part of way too many of these. But mate, what is defining for you guys? What are the areas, as you just mentioned, where you, and I know there's probably 1,000 issues that you want to get through. But what are the defining ones where the players are very stern, very strong, and you, on behalf of the Players Association, are not going to budge on?
Well, I think I've been pretty public about all those, so I sort of don't want to go over old ground, you know, particularly given the fact that we're trying to move forward. But the reality is, Michael, as it always is the case with CBAs, it's really about the percentage share of revenue, so yep. The total player payments. And
what is that currently, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, currently, based on NRL's distributable revenue, it's around 44%. But that's different to sort of whole of game revenue. But let's just say there, what we want to do is continue to track in line, you know, with that. And that's really fundamental to the claims. Obviously, the above forecast, you know, so if the game generates revenue beyond its forecast, then players need to be dialed in on that. And then obviously agreement rights around their core terms and conditions. And I think one of the other, you know, one of the major pieces in this is also the women's CBA, because this is the first time that we'll have a women's CBA, which is necessary with the last major code to do it. And we've seen the rise of the NRLW competition over the last few years, and I'll make no apologies about my feelings towards the NRLW. I truly believe it'll be the most dominant domestic code in this country within the next 1 to 2 years.
Clint, how much has COVID impacted this? And are we back to where we were before COVID? And are we looking to increase, you know, you talk about percentage of revenue. Are we looking to increase from that 2 years ago, or are we trying to increase from where we are? Because we haven't even got back to, you know, fair ground in regards to where we were before COVID.
No, so players are still operating well, at cuts, you know, through the 2020, 21 and 22. So they haven't been made whole again from the cut that they took, that ultimately, you know, again, I'm not going to, I mince my words here, they played a significant role in saving the game, you know, because it gave everyone the certainty that they needed, that there was money going to be available to pass on to clubs, you know, to save their clubs who were in financial distress as a lot of clubs were during that period of time. And it gave the NRL a bigger balance sheet to be able to ensure they could make those payments and set the code up and protect it during a pretty uncertain period of time. So, but what we're wanting is really, Michael, our claims have really been established on fair and strong foundations, which is really about players getting their fair share. We're not looking at moving forward, because there's only so much money to go around, and we understand that the women's are a critical investment that the game needs to make. So really the men are looking to track in line with what they've historically been. And then obviously the women are a necessary inclusion, which of course is going to increase the total percentage share that goes to players. But if we're just looking cycle to cycle, players are not looking for for any increases really in that space. They're looking just to track in line. But what we are looking to do is invest in key areas like your medical support fund, retirement account, injury hardship, pass buyer programs, those types of things. So again, we're looking forward. I'll always maintain my level of optimism, to get a deal. And I think, hopefully we'll make some progress in the coming weeks.
Yeah, Clint, one of my frustrations, and I suppose, because I've been involved in this before, and as has Clarkey, is the perception at times that players are greedy, and in particular the high-profile players. And they're the ones that are front and centre of it. But a lot of the time, those players are fighting for the players underneath them, the minimum wage players, to make sure they get a fair go.
Lawyers, I couldn't be prouder of the playing group. I get pretty emotional about the representing players, and people might say, "Oh, well, that can be a bad thing." I call BS on that because of the fact that I've lived it, I've seen it, I know the impact that it has on players. And the reality is, mate, these players right now, our player leaders, whether it's the players that just participated in the World Cup, or Origin players. They are constantly thinking about the players at the bottom end of their list or young players that are coming into their list. It is very easy for those players to say, just dump everything in salaries, please, Clint, and put it all in the salary cap, because ultimately what that will result in is a big, big influx of money going to the top end of town of players, and the players at the bottom will get left behind. And there'll be a big pay gap between the top and the bottom. What they do is they say, no, don't do that. They're responsible, they're professional, and they're very, very deliberate with how they want money invested or their share of revenue into things like minimum wage, retirement account, education, well-being, past player programs that, Loz, we don't have. We're one of the only codes that doesn't have a proper past player program that allows us to ensure that those players that transition away from our game are properly protected and supported. There is a program there, but it's certainly not at the level that it needs to be. And if we are going to get there, and we are going to respect the players that have dug the well, it needs investment. And what the players are choosing to do now is that they're choosing to not put as much into salaries, and they're wanting to go down that path.
We're speaking with Clint Newton, the boss of the Rugby League Players Association. Clint, player signings. Now, fans despise the current system, the uprooting of players. We see it happen in leagues around the world and at short notice, so a trade window. Do the players have a duty to the fans to agree to this?
I don't believe they do. I think that, again, this is their workplace. This is these are their core terms of employment. There's always going to be, I've said this time and time again, there's always going to be disgruntled fans around player movement. But the reality is, for every disgruntled fan, there's a fan that is applauding the player coming to their club because it gives them hope. It gives them a reason to celebrate and maintain their memberships, and clubs can recruit sponsors and increase their sponsorship book and the like. So, is it a perfect system? I've always said this. No, it's not perfect, but I can't point to a system that doesn't have significant flaws in it, particularly given the fact that any trade window is basically not a trade window or a transfer window. It's restraint and a restriction on their ability to secure their contract and their futures. So, again, I think there can be some adjustments made, but again, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's the biggest problem that we've got in the game. I just still think it comes down to how we professionally work through those. You've seen a number of clubs that have where players have left, and their fans couldn't be happier for those players to go and find a contract somewhere else. But I think that's the great part of our game. People are emotional, like they show emotion. They're passionate about their players. They want the best for their club. But at the same time, certainly in our view, that shouldn't come at the expense of some core employment rights.
Now, talking of passion, we saw the passion in the Rugby League World Cup, in particular with Samoa making it through to the World Cup final. And I think, Clint, that this will be a discussion that we will have certainly in the short term and over the long term now with the rise of the Pacific nations and the eligibility rules around state of origin. Where does the Players Association sit in terms of the eligibility rules? Because I think that you're going to find that everyone's going to have a strong opinion on this.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, Loz, and I certainly believe that we need to revisit that conversation around eligibility, you know, to ensure it's still serving, it's still fit for purpose. You know, so the game and its landscape, you know, consistently change. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think what we've seen is the game has adapted and evolved. But again, with those changes, we need to ensure that we're still tracking in line with what we actually, what the intentions are that we set out to. Now, again, what we've seen is the international game has got significant momentum. We need to find space for the international game in our calendar. And this is why all parties, including clubs, IRL, NRL, and the RLPA, need to come together to work out what is a schedule that we can all stand behind and point to and say, this is what rugby league's going to look like for the next decade, and pull together a package that we can take to our major partners and our broadcasters that doesn't diminish the content of domestic rugby league, but absolutely enhances the international product. But one of the challenges we've got, Loz, as you're acutely aware, and Michael, you're very much aware of this in the cricket world, is that we can't just keep loading more and more on our athletes. And Mike, I've got significant concerns about just bolting on more matches and more matches when our code has never been harder. It's never been more physically demanding and even mentally demanding for players than it is right now in the history of the code. And so therefore, we shouldn't be just thinking that the easy solution is let's just put more matches into the schedule, because the consequence of that is going to be players will play more matches, they become more at risk. You've got their clubs that affect, that are their full-time employer that is having to take on additional risk for Origin and for International Rugby League. And then when we talk about pre-season tournaments, for me, there needs to be space found for International Rugby League. But it cannot just be as a bolt-on to a pre-existing schedule. That's why we need to actually have a proper discussion, work through it, and see how we can grow both the domestic competition and international rugby league.
Clint, in a position like yours, how do you get this balance right between, you know, we've seen in a number of sports senior players or individual players having feelings in and around endorsement and sponsorship versus the amount of money that comes with that sponsorship. So how do you protect the players but also explain to them, hang on, guys, if a company's going to pay $1, $2, $5, $15, $20 million to sponsor your jersey, your club, whatever it is, you know, there's got to be give and take here. And I'm talking about, is it junk food? Is it gambling? Is it alcohol? Whatever it is, how do you, in your position, speak to the players and get a balance where you want to look after them but they've also got to realise it's hard to get major sponsors these days?
Yeah, I think, we all know that Australia particularly, or certainly sport in our region, is saturated at the moment. We've got more codes playing in our country and more professional clubs than most in the world. Mm. You're talking about the population that we have. So, again, it's a tough market, but... again, certainly in my view, our code is a dominant code. The product is fantastic. The players are incredibly authentic and real. And we've got the best talent, certainly in my view, in our region. So, again, we're not selling marbles here. We're actually selling a fantastic product. And with the NRLW, the way it's going, we've got such a significant opportunity in that space. The players are well aware that you just can't have 100% distribution model to players based on, you know, the revenue that comes in. What we then need to ensure is that that the player's percentage share is fair and reasonable based on their contribution. Because, again, the reality is, no one can turn a dollar without, you know, clubs and players. So, again, what we've got to do is make sure the balance is right. I believe, you know, anything that we've put forward has taken into consideration that. But, again, I think the players have been great in regards to not just wanting to put their hand out all the time, and they understand that there's plenty of people that need investment and plenty of areas in the game that need it. So, again, I couldn't be the prouder of the playing group, and it's great to represent them.
Clint, really appreciate your time this morning, and let's hope this is all sorted and done dusted sooner rather than later. The CBA, thanks so much, mate.
No worries. Again, we'll look forward. I'm confident we'll get an agreement done that we can all be proud of and point to and say that, hey, mums and dads of the world, get your daughter or your son to come and play rugby league, because if they play our code, they're going to have the best terms and conditions, and that's, I think, something that we should all be working towards.
Thanks so much, mate.
Nice.
Okay, the situation over at the World Cup. Argentina leading Poland 2-0.
Yes.
Oh, they have had Poland. So let's face it, let's book it in. The Socceroos will be playing Argentina in the round of 16, barring some incredible circumstances in the last 10 minutes of these two games. In the other match, Mexico leads Saudi Arabia 2-0. So as it stands in this group, Argentina is top on 6 points. Poland and Mexico are both on 4 points. And they're both 2 goals for, 2 goals against. Naturally, 0 goal difference. When they played each other, it was a scoreless draw. But, and I'm trusting the great Gary Lineker here. He's tweeted, as it stands now, Poland would go through ahead of Mexico in second place on, how's this, Loz? Fewer yellow cards.
What?
That's the tiebreaker.
Fewer yellow cards.
Yeah, fewer yellow cards would see Poland go through to the round of 16. So Mexico are going to be going all out here, and Poland's going to be parking the bus not to concede another goal. I'll tell you what, every time we look up, Loz, Argentina are running rings around
it's
Poland.
It's like they could have scored 5-6 goals, Argentina.
It's a miracle it's not. Well, even in the first half, they were just under siege, Poland. Remember, Argentina lost the first match against Saudi Arabia, and it looks like they're going to top the group after that.
Well, even in this other game, you know, Mexico are on the attack all the time, and they're going for it. They have to go for it, obviously.
Big time. So that's the situation after the Socceroos. If you're just waking up,
how's Messi looking?
He's got the ball at his feet at the moment. There's a cross left boot just headed out by the Polish defender.
He missed a penalty, didn't he?
Missed a penalty. Great save by Wojciech Szczęsny, the Juventus
Grey Wiggle.
Former Arsenal keeper.
Grey Wiggle might just be our man, I reckon, Middo. Penalty shootouts.
V. Messi. In a penalty shootout in the round
top
of 16
left.
Of the World Cup. Gosh,
top left.
Could you imagine?
Grey Wiggle, shuffle over, boy.
Well, now that you're the unofficial Australian goalkeeping coach...
Yes, that's a good point. I'll be messaging him.
DM him.
Yeah, I will.
Find a way to get the message through. Just get up against Messi, G. Wiggle.
Yeah.
Just go left.
Shuffle left. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just shuffle.
Love it. We're going to speak to Steve Beaver-Menzies shortly. And by the way, we spoke to Mossy, Phil Moss, just after 6 o'clock this morning. You can imagine how much he was buzzing being at the game over there in Qatar. If you missed that, you can catch up all the interviews on our podcast. Just search Big Sports Breakfast wherever you get your podcasts. As I mentioned, we've got Beaver coming up shortly. Cameron Crockett, I'm going to preview the Mudgee Cup Day tomorrow, which we've just been told. Boom, can't get a ticket, sold out.
The Mudgee Cup. Wow. It's always a good race day, isn't it?
Orient.
We've been lucky enough to go there a number of times. We'll be at the Orient tonight for
Orient,
the Calcutta. Dave and Marlo are hosting, so it'll be a a fantastic night. So get your tickets early, I would suggest, if you want to be a part of that Calcutta. But the Orient Hotel, get down there from, what, 4 or 5, I suppose. I don't know what time it'll be on. Probably around 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
But they do a wonderful meal there at the Ori Hotel. It will be packed to the rafters, no doubt about it. And we're in for a big couple of days.
Yep, the Ori tonight, Mudgee Cup tomorrow. And Archie Thompson, former Socceroo, he'll be buzzing as well. We'll speak to him after 8 o'clock this morning. And yes, yesterday, the New South Wales Rugby League announced a new major sponsor, Westpac, taking over from Brighton's lawyers in a deal worth, well, what has been reported, $8 million over 4 years.
I thought you were going to say gambling company then, Mido.
$8 million over 4 years, and a great initiative as well. So $5,000 for every try scored in the men's and women's Origin next year will go to Westpac Lifesaver Rescue Helicopter, which is obviously a very necessary thing in our community. And the great Beaver Menzies joining us now. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, boys. How you doing?
Yeah, really well, thanks. And you see, isn't it funny with so much negativity at times around the game? Gee, it's in rude health, at least certainly at the top end, when you get this sort of corporate support.
Yeah, look, it is. And I was out there yesterday, and it was a good feel in the air. And Tommy Trbojevic looked impressive in the jerseys and the young girls. And it was, it's just really good. Look, they're a huge, corporate partner in Australia. For them to be involved with the Blues, the Westpac Blues, it's certainly exciting.
Beaver, let's go straight to the elephant in the room, buddy. What are your thoughts on Loz not being able to be a part of your great club?
No, it's outrageous.
How embarrassing.
Look, Loz, we need Jeff Toovey here. We need him. That's what we need.
Oh, dear.
I was looking forward to hanging out with you too, Boop.
On the north side, it's good down here. We've got a nice couple of houses for you to buy. I know you like to live in two or three during the week.
I can rent them off you or your properties.
Well, you love this, Beaver, because last Wednesday we were at the Stain. We did the show there for the Socceroos France game. And Loz, during one of the news breaks, walks out, looks out across at Manly Beach, folds his arms, sniffs in the air and goes, "I've decided I want to live on the beach."
Join
so
the
he
queue.
Had this great epiphany as he smelt the air of the northern beaches.
Oh. Sometimes the penny just drops. Sometimes it takes a while, but sometimes it just goes, "I want to be here."
Yeah, it's taken me 53 years, Boover, but I just had that moment where I went. It was a wonderful morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, and people were out and about. I didn't realise how many people walked around the beach and up that Corso, but a very special place.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, no,
come on a winter's morning and jump in the ocean. It's a little bit different.
Hey, mate, just getting back to this sponsorship with Westpac, the thing I like about it is that it's helping the pathways, but also the female participation pathways, which is a growing part of rugby league.
Yeah, look, they're doing both the men's and the women's, and I think, and all the way through to the juniors. So it's a complete sponsorship, and it's exciting. You know, the game, the female game, comes on in leaps and bounds every year, and I think it's one of the premier female sports coming through in Australia. So these girls are so talented, and they just keep getting better. And to someone to come along and say, "Look, I love the men's game. It's one of the if not the top three rating things in the." In the televised calendar, but hey, this female sport's amazing. We want to get on board, and the juniors we want to be involved in all of it. So it's a great way to do it.
The dollars though reported just shows the strength naturally of Origin, and we know obviously its popularity and how it generates that corporate support, but. Do we need, Beaver, to change the eligibility rules, which is such a subject of debate in the wake of the World Cup, where we see Samoa making a World Cup final and naturally their players are allowed to play Origin? But on the other hand, you look at England, and now Victor Radley's declared his allegiance for England. He can't play for New South Wales. What do you make of it all? Do we need to change it or stay as is?
Yeah, it's a really tough one. You know, you want to keep... you just don't want everyone playing Origin because it just makes like it is it like the best in the world versus the best in the world, all nations. So you need to make some rules around it. How you make those rules, I'm not too sure. But you know, on the opposite side of it, all these, you know, Samoa, Tonga, all these players that are coming through that are saying, no, I don't want to play. They're eligible for both, right? I don't want to play for the Kangaroos. I want to play for Samoa. I want to play. It's really exciting for our national game. So even though we love State of Origin, it's one of the biggest things on our calendar, we need to keep mindful of the international game and make sure that keeps growing. Because in the next, you know, 4 or 5 years, these other island nations, they're going to all start, you know, playing as good as Samoa, and as Samoa did, and start pushing the Aussies to World Cup final. So it is a really tough one. It's I don't think I can answer in a couple of minutes.
Beef, what about Manly, mate? Where do you see the club at the moment? Obviously, Desi not there now. It's been a big back end to the year last year, and a lot of talk, obviously, in this lead up to Anthony Seibold. But where do you see the club at, and what do they need to do to get back in that finals footy?
Yeah, look, it's been a tough, you know, 3-6 months, whatever you want to sort of, where the club sort of come from. They're doing all right, you know, early part of the season, and it all sort of went downhill fast with Desi's exit. The club just obviously had to move forward. It's never good when one of your legends of your club leaves. They've got Siebe, Shane Flanagan, Jimmy Dimmock. They've got a pretty good coaching staff, so it's exciting. They've got some good players. They've got a really good nucleus of a team. Some good kids coming through. I went to a function there the other day. We had some of the key sponsors, and it was exciting. There was a buzz in the air. So I think it's, you know, as tough as it was to go through that, I really think it's an exciting new era for the club. So there's plenty of promise there. And I have no doubt that, you know, Siebe is down there now, but he's goal would be we need to get back to playing, you know, finals football, and you know, it's not a 3-year plan to play a finals football. It's a hey, let's do it next year. And he hasn't quite. That's me just saying that. They've got high hopes down there, I'm sure.
And you did mention yesterday at the New South Wales Rugby League announcement, they were joining forces with Westpac, but one of the players there was Tommy T, and you mentioned how he was looking tremendous. I mean, it's so important for Manly's future that he stays on the field. How is he looking? What's his pre-season been like? And did you have a good conversation with him yesterday about the optimism surrounding the club, Beef?
Yeah, look, he's looking as big as ever. They're big humans. I'm sure you boys know. If you stand next to Tommy Turbo, he's got like 2 or 3 inches on me. He's a big human. He was looking super fit. Obviously, he hasn't played in any of the World Cup. So, having guys like that around, he's sort of talking. Training's been pretty tough. I actually spoke at this function early on that I was talking about earlier, and he said that it was pretty ruthless the training. But having and all the young kids will be back there because all the senior guys are sort of overseas. So it's Tommy's had a full preseason this year, so he should be ready to go round one, and that's exciting for the club because we do need him. He obviously needs to keep evolving as a player and can't just be the number one choice for where the ball goes, but we need him on the field, and him and DCE and those boys are smart enough to build a bit of a game plan of how to use him.
Beaver, thanks so much for joining us, mate. And can you please use your contacts and get Loz a gig there at Manly, please?
I'll pull some strings.
Appreciate it, mate. No, thanks for your time.
Cheers, boys. Thanks.
Thinking about your next build or renovation, Wideline Windows and Doors has all the planning tools at your fingertips. Their website is full of inspirational ideas to make your project a success. There's advice and tips to get you started. They even have a colour selector and window planning tool. Plus, free online quotes returned in 48 business hours. Just upload your plans or tell them what you need. Easy. There's never been a better time to take a closer look at the Wideline Windows and Doors website. Just go to www.wideline.com.au. Now, high drama here at the World Cup, Loz. There's so much going on, it's hard to know where to look. But Mexico, they're desperate. For a goal. Desperate for a goal. They actually put one in the back of the net, but he was offside.
They're going to get one here.
And, he's put it about 10 metres above the bar. But, goal kick Saudi Arabia. So the situation is here, Mexico 2-0 up over Saudi Arabia. Argentina 2-0 up against Poland. But as it stands, Argentina are top of the group. So they're going to play the Socceroos in the round of 16. But to the other spot, is currently held by Poland, even though they're them and Mexico are all one win, one loss, one draw, 4 points, two goals for, two against. But
that game is over now, Mido.
Okay, so Argentina have won.
So as it stands now, Poland are through with Argentina. But with 4 minutes to go in the Saudi and Mexico game, if Mexico score a goal,
they would go through.
They would go through.
And the reason at the moment Poland would go through is fewer yellow cards. That's the tiebreaker.
Look,
same goals for, same against, same goal difference. So the Polish fans, look at them, yeah, all looking at their phones. Who was our caller yesterday? Said, you can't play the games at the same time. Are you seeing this?
Chris,
this is why we love it. This is unreal. Drama. Build it up. The Polish fans in agony here watching this. But the ball's down the other end. But anyway, we'll keep you updated. But what is certain and what is now locked in is the Socceroos, as was Pup's wish.
Yes.
Goal, Saudi Arabia. Is that a goal?
Yes.
Ah, okay, that's it. That's that then.
What about the fans in that other game?
Poland,
they will be going off.
So Poland is set to go through here. Hang on, what happens here for Saudi Arabia? No, their goal difference is no good.
No good.
Poland are going to go through with Argentina from Group C. But the Socceroos are going to be facing Lionel Messi,
yes,
and Argentina. Is it 6 a.m. Sunday morning or 5 a.m.? Anyway, it's Sunday
I'll be
morning.
Watching. I will be watching.
Sunday morning, the Socceroos will play Argentina.
What are they doing celebrating?
Oh, well, they know.
They know
Polish
the goal.
Fans know that they're through because of that goal by Saudi Arabia.
So if Mexico score, it doesn't matter.
Because their goal difference is now superior. So
they knew straight away too, didn't they?
No, Poland are through. Look at them. They're just delighted. They've just been absolutely hosed for 90 minutes by Argentina, but they're going to get through. Anyway, Mudgee Cup tomorrow. And remember as well, first and second in the Mudgee Cup will be eligible for next year's big dance as well. But he's got a huge hand there tomorrow. Of course, he spent so much of his life in Mudgee, but he's now based there at Scone. Is Cameron Crockett. Cameron, good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, really well. Thanks. Great to have you on the show again. I guess, looking at your old town a month or so ago, gee, this meeting looked in jeopardy. It's just going to be great to be there tomorrow, considering what they've gone through to get the track ready.
Yeah, there was a few doubts about, but luckily enough, it cleared up. And they were expecting a little drop of rain this week, but it never came. So I think the track will be pretty firm and fast tomorrow. But we're coming into Australia in summertime, so if the rain does clear like it has, we're going to have a pretty firm, fast season, I think.
Now, is it for you going back to Mudgee always? I guess a bit of a range of emotions for you, but great to see a lot of people.
Yeah, it's good. Like, I grew up there pretty much my whole life. So all my best mates are there. And, like, obviously a few of them have moved about now as well. But all my good friends, all my best memories are there. Pretty much every memory I ever had with my dad was there. Funnily enough, when we moved to Scone, I sort of was always thinking, oh, well, it's only 2 hours away from Mudgee, but you get so busy, so I don't get back there very often anyway. But it's not that far. It's always a great day. Max and Colleen, obviously the club's underneath different leadership now, but I remember years and years ago when I was very young, I was mates with Max and Colleen's son, and we went to the races there, and there was one barbecue on a hill, and they've made it, built it up to what it is today. They're not sort of on the club anymore, unfortunately, but they've certainly deserved most of the accolades for what it is. We've had days there where you couldn't get in or out of the place. Growing up, going to the Mudgee Cup, it's been the club's grown immensely. It's incredible.
You've got a few live chances on the card there tomorrow. Any horse in particular do you think's got a real chance of winning?
I've got a horse going around called Indicative. He's only had two runs for us, actually. Last time I was on the Big Sports Breakfast here before Scone, he was having his first run for us, and he runs second in a 1300 maiden on Cup Day, the country only maiden. I was just reading back through, actually 10 winners have come out of the race, so that was obviously a pretty smart maiden, and he went on and won a weaker kind of a race a couple of weeks later over 1400 at Gunnedah. I think he's a pretty good horse. I'm just trying to work out which way to go, the 1100 or the 1200. I accepted him both, and I think he drew similar in both and was definitely going to go to the 1200, which was always the plan. But he drew well in the 11, and it looks a bit of a weaker race. So we've got that decision coming. But he had a minor setback last prep. That's why we turned him out. If he sort of goes tomorrow, he'll be very hard to beat. But if he comes through it all right, I think he's got a very bright future.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on Indicative, whether it goes to race 4 or 5, the 11 or the 1200 tomorrow. And in the cup itself, it's probably unlikely to get a run. New World Tapestry, you've also got it in the 6th over the 1200 as well.
Yeah, he's a bit of a question mark for me. I don't know what to make of him. Like, if you were to watch his track work, the horse has definitely got a good amount of ability. We've got him there first up at Dubbo, and he ran third to a Magic Cerise, who's obviously a very good country galloper. So we thought we had him on track and heading the right way. Then he had a little setback and took him back to Armidale, and I just don't know what happened there. I've just put a line straight through it. I don't know whether he didn't handle the track or what happened. He just didn't show up. So not sure which way we're going there. But looking at his track work, I think the 1200, but he is an imported horse, so you think he might get further. I don't know. He's got pretty plain form since he arrived, to be fair, but he is going well. Obviously, it's a big dance qualifier, so it's pretty hard, but people have asked my opinion about the big dance, and I think we'll just go for it, really, because those country cups have always been hard to win at the best of times, particularly now, but it is what it is. I don't think he's good enough to shape up against those horses if he does get a run. So he'll probably go to the 1200 regardless, but I'd be disappointed if he didn't run well in the 1200, even though it probably is a touch short.
You've got Constant Flight in for Saturday at Rose Hill, and also in that 1200-metre sprint as well tomorrow. So what are you thinking there? I know it's got 63 kilos tomorrow, so what, likely to head to Rose Hill maybe?
No, I'll probably go to Mudgee, I think.
Okay.
I think he's about $60 or something in the market in Rose Hill. He's obviously in a benchmark 88, which is very solid form. Yeah. Kind of hoping to get a few runs under his belt and then a little bit of a let up and come back and have another go at the Tamworth Cup, where he ran second last year. He might need a touch further than the 1200, but I think ability-wise, he's probably the best horse in the race. He's got an apprentice on, which gets him down to 61. Yeah. Mm. The race itself, I've won it a few times, and geez, I don't think it's quite the level this year as what it normally is. That's with full respect to all the horses in it. But there is a few that are coming through the grades and probably on their way to open company that'll be the hardest to beat, whereas normally it's a pretty solid field of horses that have been there and done that. That's probably what he's got up his sleeve. He's drawn off a little bit, but he's got incredible gate speed. He'll be the first out and he'll go straight across. So depending how the track's playing, that'll play into his hands. But he's in good order. His first run, a little bit questionable, but he'd had a long time off and the tracks are a bit patchy, and I don't think he likes it like that. I think back on top of the ground tomorrow, he'll improve a lot.
Okay, so it sounds like a good each-way bet at the price. Race 6, number 1, constant flight. But overall, it seems like Indicative, whichever way it goes, that's your best chance by the sounds of it, Cameron.
Oh, 100%. But he's got 61.5, and in the 1200, he's got a little bit of a wide draw. So I'm not saying he doesn't have a task ahead of him, and we've sort of got our sights set on a highway for him over 1400 second up. So he is going to need a little bit further. But I just think he's just got a bit more than most country horses, and I'd be shocked if he gets the right run, which he looks to in the 1100. Although we're leaning towards the 1200 for the extra 100 metres, we might end up in the 1100. I think if he gets the right run and the right ride, I just, even with the 61.5, I just think he's got too much upside for the horses he's running against.
Appreciate your time as always, Cameron. Enjoy heading home.
No worries, guys. Thank you.